We ain't going out like that. Watch me go and bounce right back. Cause we ain't going out like that, no. We ain't going out like that. We ain't going out like that. Watch me go and bounce right back. Welcome to Any Given Season, a bowl season podcast. Today, we're joined by the former head coach at Bowling Green, Utah, Florida, and Ohio State. He won 3 national championships as a head coach and is currently an analyst for Fox Sports as part of their weekly Big Noon Kickoff show. He's been a friend for the past 25 years. Please welcome to the show, Urban Meyer. Thanks so much for joining us today, Urban. I appreciate it. Good seeing you.
Yeah, you're a great friend, Nick. Good to see you as well.
We don't get to see each other often, but we got to spend a lot of time together last week at the Orange Bowl. We reminisced a little bit, talked a lot about a lot of things. I want to start this conversation talking about your coaching journey a little bit. We met back in 2000 when we worked together on Bob Davies' staff at Notre Dame. I like to think I played a very small role in your career, helping you prepare for that Bowling Green interview. If you remember, we were all preparing to head out to LA for the last game of the season at USC. And we weren't predicted to do much at Notre Dame that year, but somehow if we won the game at USC, we'd go to the Fiesta Bowl. On top of all that work, you're trying to prepare for probably the biggest interview of your life at that point. You came into my office, you dropped a folder on my desk. It had everything in it, but it was a little bit disorganized. So you said, but make sense of this, put it together, put it in order. So I put it in a binder. You told me it was a big part of your interview. So looking back at your early years in coaching and becoming a head coach, all those years of preparation, all those years of saving those notes, putting them in a folder, how did you know what to save, what to do? Did you always know you wanted to be a head coach?
I did. I got in the profession, obviously, very young, 21 years old. And early on, I was so glad. I worked for some incredible people, and I was a guy, though, that Nick, that when I was young, I wanted to be a professional athlete. I played professional baseball. I wasn't good enough to play professional football, but I just loved sports, and I became enamored with the coaching profession at a very young age. I was studying Nebraska football when I was, in my early teens, because that was the first program that really invested in players and strength training. And, they up to that point, now you're so young, you don't remember this, but strength training really was frowned upon. I remember my dad made me go get a note from my doctor before I was allowed to buy a weight set when I was 14, 15 years old,
because no one was really behind that. People think you're going to get too stiff or too
tight. Your back, they were worried about your back and all kinds of stuff, and too stiff. It was an amazing time. And so I went from being, 120 pounds to 170, 180 pounds in 1 year. I was eating like a maniac. I was, doing all the training, lifting, and no one else really was. So I went from hitting fly balls to home runs. I went from being a second stringer to an all-state safety. So I became just nuts about sports performance development and coaching. And I went on as long as I could. And then I knew I was wanting to be a coach. So I was studying at a very early age, and that carried on. Once I became a coach, I would drive. It was not uncommon for me to drive 4 or 5 hours to go listen to Tom Osborne speak, Joe Paterno speak, Lou Holtz speak. And I would always come back with notes. And we didn't have iPads. There were no iPads or computers back then. There was all notebooks. And I would just jam these in. I was the king of manila folders. I had every from discipline to academics to off-season program to recruiting philosophy to offense, defense, strategy. And I mean, that's what I threw on your desk. And if you remember, I think we lost some of it in the hurricane. But I've had colleagues, some young coaches that got a hold of that plan to win. And it's really a cool template of A to Z how to run a program.
Well, as luck would have it, I dug through my folders last night. I saved a copy, of course, Urban. I wasn't going to, take all this valuable knowledge and organize it and not keep a copy. So
wow.
Let's look at the tabs. Winning in 2001, staff policy and responsibilities, player policy, schedules, player development, clock management had its own section. A lot of coaches could use that. Pretty good stuff. You
Unbelievable.
yeah, I've saved this for a long. I gotta have you sign it one of these days. For the young coaches out there, you're obviously mindful as an assistant of, hey, this, when you did something, when you learned something, when you're around a guy, you said, hey, this is going to be valuable to me as a head coach. You've had 24 coaches work under you, go on to become college or NFL head coaches. That's not by accident. Did you have in mind when you were coaching, obviously you're busy doing your job, but did you feel a responsibility to mentor young assistant coach and help them become head coaches, much like your coaches did for you?
I did. I had the greatest. I had Lou Holtz and Earl Bruce were, and Bob Davey and Sonny Lubick were four guys I worked for. And Earl Bruce became like my second father. He was incredible. And he took it upon himself to him and Lou Holtz took me under the wing, and it changed. It impacted me that these people, they're both Hall of Fame coaches that would take time out of their own personal time to mentor me, coach me, and then even when I wasn't done working for them, they're the ones that pushed me hard for Bowling Green. And so I believed in the coaching profession. I believed in a very clear way on how to do it. And one of the, other than the great player, there's nothing more valuable than a coach. There's nothing. An assistant coach that is aligned with you, that believes in what you're teaching. And there's nothing more detrimental to a program than a bad coach. And we've all experienced some bad, being around some negative stuff in your careers, but very rarely did I had Hall of Famers on my staff, and very fortunate the coaching staffs I've had.
With all the NIL and transfer portal chaos nowadays, are you happy you retired when you did? How would this plan to win be different now than it was 20 years ago?
I think fundamentally it's still very similar. I think obviously there's a lot of differences. It's never been, the common denominator of every great team I've ever had is selflessness. And in 2024, 2025, I imagine it's never been harder. But that's society in general. I was never driven by money, and I just, I'm the recipient of some big contracts because the world got out of hand there for a minute for coaches, still is. And I've always believed in players should have the ability to profit. I mean, it's the United States of America. If a player can earn money off his name and likeness, he should. But that's not what happened. What happened was all the donors, it was basically paying players for play. You're going to go out and recruit. Let's get as much money together and go recruit a player. I don't believe in that at all. But once again, I have no desire to return. That to have a player you invest in walk in and leave, I the transfer thing's got me a little bit confused. I think, the graduate transfer was very positive. We had players that just quite, weren't playing enough and they wanted to move on. I think that's great. But I'm not being overly critical because there's a lot of strengths, but it's, I think for dinosaurs like me that I don't have that desire.
Let's talk about bowl games for a little bit. We had an unbelievable bowl season, top to bottom, a lot of great games. You were the head coach in 15 bowl games, and I looked this up last night. You were 12-3, 800 record in bowl games. I mean, your overall record is pretty impressive, but theoretically, in bowl games, you're a great team playing another great team. But not all of them were for the national championship. They were all meaningful. In fact, back when you were at Bowling Green in 2001, 2002, you were 8-3. And 9-3, and did not go to a bowl game because there were only 25 at the time, not the 41 there are now. What was that like?
Yeah, when I was that was kind of our, to make it to a bowl game was the ultimate, and some programs had just expectations, and that's what you do, you go to a bowl game. But I still even remember that even when I was a graduate assistant at Ohio State, that even the Ohio States of the world, going to a great bowl game. That was your goal. Obviously, win a conference championship and go to the Rose Bowl. But even if that didn't happen, we went to the Cotton Bowl in 1987. I love bowls. I love the bowl experiences. And to be able to stand in front of a team and announce you're going somewhere, I remember those. And the opposite of that's true. One of the worst days I've ever had is to stand in front of a team that I love that earned a right to go to a bowl game, and no one selected us in 2001. And that was Bowling Green. And then we get up to number 16 in the country, undefeated at Bowling Green again, highest ranking they've ever been. And again, they're just the Mid-America Conference, I believe, only had one bowl game back then, the Motor City Bowl, and we didn't win the conference. And I was even told by our athletic director in 01 to quit, stop practicing, because we went out and practiced, because our players wanted, that wasn't me, the players wanted to keep going, because we were on fire. You know, it's just one of those great teams, great people, great seniors. And then finally I called a team meeting and said, it's over. You know, and guys are crying, that, you know, guys are, you know, heartbroken. I was heartbroken. And to say our season's over. So the bowl, I'm a strong proponent of the bowls.
At Utah, your first bowl game as a head coach was the Liberty Bowl, where you shut out Southern Miss, capping off a great season. How meaningful was that Liberty Bowl victory back then at Utah?
Game changer. You know, it was my first bowl game as a head coach. And I remember, you know, Shelly and I didn't have those reflecting moments. And, you know, to say that a lot of guys never get to go to bowl games. And so here I am, a young coach, and we take a team, won the conference championship for the first time in 60 years at Utah, and went to Liberty Bowl and loved every minute of it. We had a big following. A lot of students came. I remember we won the bowl game and I grabbed that damn trophy. I went over the student body, and I mean, our AD's like, don't do that. And I handed them the trophy. And they, all of a sudden, I look up in the crowd, they're passing around the Liberty Bowl trophy. And so I think that's the essence of college. It's not professional sports. I know it's becoming more and more like it. But, you know, there are a few people that can earn a living playing this game, but the majority of them are going there for the collegiate experience. And I'm hopeful, and I do believe that the bowl experience will still be very critical to a collegiate experience.
Yeah, we do as well, obviously. And you think about it, in one way, a bowl game is a reward for a successful season. But that Liberty Bowl game also, I think, helped propel your team into the next season. When you went undefeated, you were 12-0, you crashed the BCS, which was a lot harder to do back then because there was no guaranteed Group of Five spot. How important are bowl game opportunities for programs that are building or rebuilding?
Well, you hear the term that you just keep, you know, refining the skill set of your players. And I would always use it to develop our young guys, you know, that the up and covers. Obviously, you're going to try to win that game. That's number one by far. But number two is you got a guy that's probably going to be your starting quarterback next year. And I would give him multitude of reps and you know, use it for development. So from A to Z, the bowl experience is phenomenal. It's phenomenal for your players, your staff, your support staff. However, it's also essential for the development of your team. To have a team that doesn't go to bowl game, you're already 2 weeks behind. You're already actually more than that, because that other game is more than a week of preparation. Mm-hmm. So I'd say you're a month behind, and we all know that a month is hard to catch up with because the other team's not going to slow down. So I was very fortunate, went to a lot of bowl games, and we won a lot of games the next year because of that bowl game.
You know, the bowl games themselves on the field are always exciting. The bowl week, some of them are legendary. The activities that the coaches and their families and the student athletes get to engage in, some things that they've never done before. What are some of your favorite bowl game memories on or off the field?
Well, there's so many of them. I just told you one about Utah, where I passed that damn trophy up in the crowd. And I imagine it. I mean, they're all probably drinking a little bit and all that, and they didn't break it. So that was up there. Then we went to one of the great memories I ever had is when Utah crashed the BCS party. And we were the first non-BCS. I'd get so pissed when the announcers would say, oh, they don't belong. They're not a BCS team. And I would stand. I it was back when I didn't care. I'd say, on the media, I'd say, I'll take my, you know, you go tell me Alex Smith's not a BCS player, I'll buy your ticket right now. I think it was Trev Alberts was a media guy back then. and was just ripping our program. And I said, I'll buy your ticket and you come watch our practice. Then we can visit afterwards. And you tell me this is not a BCS team. We have BCS players. We have BCS coaches. So the drive from Salt Lake City to Phoenix, it was legendary. I didn't make, we flew, but I heard about it. It was basically a traffic jam from Salt Lake where we filled Sun Devil Stadium in the Fiesta Bowl against Pitt. And that was a great memory. And we won the game. And that's when I went to Florida and handed the whistle to Kyle. But the other one, I grew up in Ohio and watching the Rose Bowl, and we never made it there. I coached in several Fiesta Bowls, Orange Bowl, Sugar Bowls. Was never able to make it in my final game at Ohio State, ironically, against Washington. That was one of those moments where I remember wiping tears out of my eyes and saying, you're finally in the Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all, a place that you grew up watching. So I could go on for about 3 hours about bowl experiences, but those are some of the top ones.
Those are good ones for sure. Let's transition into this week. Right now, two teams preparing for the national championship. I want to talk to you about what it takes to prepare for a national championship game in this week before the semifinals and the finals. You won three of them. Two at Florida in 2006 and 2008. That was during the old BCS system. So it was just two teams, no semifinals. You had about a month or so to prepare. Then at Ohio State in 2014, you won the first CFP championship game ever, which was the four-team format. Now here we are 10 years later, we're in the 12-team format. Tell us about this time period that Notre Dame and Ohio State find themselves in right now. You win the semifinal game. What is the plan or strategy for this week leading up to the game?
Yeah, Lou Holtz was like a walking encyclopedia for me. I'd call him nonstop, and I just would rely on him, and he would give me the greatest advice. You know, and I'll never forget the first one when I was at Florida. We're playing, ironically, Ohio State for the title. I had a month off, and he kept saying, remember, and he made me repeat the date to him, January 8th at 7 p.m. And he said, that's when your team has to be ready. If they're ready 2 weeks earlier, a week, you know, as coaches have a tendency to speed things up too much. So I broke it up actually down into three different quarters. First quarter is nothing but fundamentals. Second one was preliminary game plan. Third one was game plan week. And then last one was game week. And so I gave our players, I wanted them to stay in their routine. You know, Tuesday was going to be a padded practice, not near as hard as during the season. And then we actually gave them a pregame meal on Friday night. And I just wanted their bodies and their minds are so into the flow. I didn't want to change it. And I thought that was some of the greatest advice. That changes a little bit now when you're in the playoff because you don't have a month off. And motivation will not be the key. The key is going to be, and this is, I would make the players repeat it, the most prepared team will win. It's not going to be your lucky t-shirt. It's not going to be, you know, how many tickets you get for your girlfriend and her family. It's not going to be the bowl gift. Is it going to be a hoodie, sweatshirt, or a regular, you know, all that nonsense? It's the most prepared team's going to win. So to become the most prepared team, I need all your focus on preparation, not the other nonsense, not the other stuff. I can only imagine the stuff you guys are going through. I go through. I mean, our first national championship game, I want to say we had 350 requests for tickets. And these are like friends. These are like people that probably deserve tickets. And I remember coming home one day, and Shelly was just livid. We're not livid, but she goes, I don't know what to do. And she showed me this list of people requesting tickets. And I thought, oh my God, I can only imagine what our players are going through. You know, and so typical me, I said, Shelly, you handle that. And, but I was respectful in trying to get our players to make sure we focus on what's important now. And that's the most prepared team will win this national championship Monday.
Well, that was, you started talking about, I was going to ask you, you know, I was part of fortunate enough to be part of a Super Bowl season. I know as much as coaches like to say, well, we have our routine, we don't change it no matter the type of game, you kind of have to change it. It's not the same kind of game. You know, how did you help the team manage the off-field distractions that come with going to a championship game so they could focus on the task at hand?
Well, there's nothing more powerful on a team than the leaders on your team. And so I would meet with them constantly. And, you know, the message, once again, the pregame speech, you know, I hate to, you know, because the media probably loves that stuff. It's really not that important. What's important is your Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of game week, which is, that's what's going on right now. So I would lean on the leaders of the team. If you have great, incredible leaders that are worried about you know, how we're going to win this game, then I knew that I would lean on them. If you had the kind of leadership on your team that was more worried about bowl gifts and presents and, you know, and tickets for their family, and I've had that too, then I would kind of take it away from them and I'd take it. So you have to know what kind of team you have. The best ones are the ones where you have a locker room filled with grown men that want to win a national title. And I think these two, I don't think, these two, they've got incredible locker rooms. So if you have a great locker room, you lean on them.
Do you like this new 12-team format?
I love it. I think it's great. I think the great teams and the great players are still playing. There was one time we did on Big Noon near the last month of the season, there was 25 teams that thought they were going to win the national title. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the old BCS era, there were three or four. You know, so, and the days of good players sitting out are, I don't like that, but I understand it. I just don't like it. But you saw the best players in college football playing this year.
Yeah. I think we turned the corner a little bit. You know, I think schools are figuring out how to distribute the money to the players. And, you know, if guys don't play in bowl games or the playoff, they don't get paid. We had the top 10 Heisman Trophy vote getters this year all played in their bowl game. So I think that's a sign. I saw the coaches voted the other yesterday to recommend moving the transfer portal date to 10 days in January. I think that'll help too. So all these changes happened so quick, Urban. We didn't, I don't think the NCAA had a good plan for it. So we're kind of forced to a little on the job training here, I think.
Sure. And that's understandable. I mean, I've never been that critical of the NCAA because I, you know, the NCAA is simply a bunch of presidents. You know, they're, you know, for people to rip the mess out of the NCAA, I'm like, wait a minute, the NCAA really doesn't. That just stands that those are college presidents. You know,
that's
if you're
right.
Pissed off, get pissed off at the presidents. That's, you know, like I just cracks me up when I, well, the NCAA, wait. The NCAA is a cooperation of a bunch of presidents making decisions. So if you want to go swing at the president.
Well, let's talk about who we think is going to win the game. You and I were watching the Orange Bowl together in Miami, and you kind of predicted that ending. I don't know if you remember, Penn State got the ball back, tie score, 38 seconds left. Someone we were with asked you, they said, hey, coach, what would you do here? And you, without missing a beat, you said, I'd try to move the ball, but don't do anything that's going to risk turning the ball over. You either want to score to win the game or go to overtime. Sure enough, Penn State turned it over on their second play. Notre Dame gets the ball, kicks a field goal to win it. So you obviously have some prognostication abilities, coach. Let's talk about the game on Monday. What's your prediction for the game? Or let me ask you, what does each team need to do to win the game?
Well, Notre Dame is a team that has a refuse to lose mentality, a lot like their coach and the leadership on the team. I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge fan of Marcus Freeman, Al Golden, the coaching staff. And those, I don't know the players that well, but I watch them like all of us. And the quarterback, you know, he's a runner, tough guy, and transfer from Duke. And the defense is phenomenal, even with injuries they've had. So they're kind of got a refuse to lose mentality. The other team is, you know, they are the best talented, I think, and I'll say the most talented roster I've seen in maybe my lifetime. And that says something because my 08 team was, you know, that 14-15 team. But I'm not sure I've seen one where I think every skill position at Ohio State will start in the NFL. Not play. They're going to be impact players in the National Football League. That's how good they are. Never seen that before. Every one of them. And Notre Dame is not quite as talented. They're very talented. They've had some injuries. You know, their quarterback is a guy that's you know, won't be a first round draft pick. He's a rugged player, a tough player. I worry about the injury to Love, their tailback, who's a phenomenal player. You know, he's only had 16, 17 carries the last two games. I think because of the toughness and togetherness and locker room of Notre Dame, this will be a close game at halftime. I do believe that at some point the talent differential will take over and Ohio State will win by a couple scores in the fourth quarter. I think it'll be a great game.
Obviously these two programs have won multiple national championships, but these two head coaches, one of them is going to win their first national championship as a head coach. What does it feel like, Urban, to stand on that stage and hoist that trophy?
It's an out-of-body experience. You know, it's some, you know, for people that love the tradition and history of college football, just there's only one trophy at the end of the year. And a great story after my first championship in 06. I remember going back and I said to my assistant, I said, go get my father and go get Earl Bruce. Those are two people that are so instrumental in my life. They came back in the bowels of the stadium in Phoenix, in Glendale. And I looked at my dad, first of all, says, about time you did that. And then I remember telling my dad and Coach Bruce, I said, you know what's really cool? We did it. For the rest of my career, I'm going to have fun doing this. I'm not going to be stressed out because we did it. That may be the most incorrect statement ever made, because the rest of your life, at least I know Mack Brown, I talked to him about it, and some other coaches, everything you do is based on national championship. And it really takes a lot of enjoyment out of the game. I mean, you are, and once again, I'm a nut job. I'm an extremist. So it was really hard for me after the 06 national championship to ever just coach for fun. It was, if we weren't winning a national title, I was a maniac. I was like, why, you know, and we'd win by 2 scores and why don't we win by 4 scores? And it kind of took the thrill and it was really hard. But other coaches have thrived, you know. It's just, I'm just giving it my personal experience.
I get it. Well, Urban, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time today. Appreciate your friendship. Appreciate all you've done for college football, continue to do on Fox. I love your my pregame show of choice. Keep that between us. But really appreciate your time. Thanks, Urban.
Yeah, text me. Let's find each other at the game.
Yeah, I will for sure.
Good to see you, man.
And thank you all for listening to Any Given Season.
Today's guests were brought to you by Tap It. Understand how going cashless builds loyalty, engages fans, and boosts your bottom line.
You can catch all of our past and future episodes on Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, you can catch all the bowl season news on our website, bowlseason.com, and on social media at Bowl Season. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming. It's been a